He moved to Santa Ana in the fall of 1933. Mm-hmm. We ended there last time. I'm wondering what your life was like when you moved to Santa Ana.
Yeah, I had three children in school. The youngest was in sixth grade, and the second one, Jeannie, was in the eighth grade, and Arlene was in the ninth grade, junior high. And after, I guess about a couple of years, I decided that my husband's selling was just barely covering expenses. Girls were growing up, and they needed extra things girls need that age. So I tried to get a job, and of course, I had worked in drapery work, and I lived in Upland for clients in Ontario. And I finally made drapes for J.C. Penney, and also a drapery store. I don't remember what the name of it was. It was on 2nd Street. They were cheaper grapes I made for this other place, made like a pillowcase and turned wrong side out and pressed. I had a regular drapery table made. In fact, when I was working at J.C. Penney, Mr. Jones, the manager, had it made. It was a long table about, 120 inches long, and it was every inch and half inch was made up. It had a composition on the top that you could stick pins in, and then it was covered with canvas and stapled down. And it was a drop leaf table. You could make single width drapes like that, or you could put one side up and make full width, or put both sides up and make extra wide. And I worked up in that workroom about a year and a half, and finally a man from I guess the New York office was coming out, and it seems Mr. Jones wasn't supposed to have that work done, and he had to get that drapery table out of there, so he sold it to me, and I happened to have a room that was big enough I could put it in, so I made the drapes at home instead of there. I just had to do the same work when I did at home, and that's what I liked, because at that time the girls were going with boys, and they needed somebody in the house. The boys brought them home in the afternoon, and I usually had something for them to eat. And there's just somebody in the house. Otherwise, I'd probably have to give it up to stay home. And then I did work also for this other store. They'd send me out great bowls of material, and I'd cut it off what I wanted. And at that time, a lot of it was rayon, which with a fog down there caused it to shrink a lot. After it was made, maybe the outside would shrink way up and look terrible. So they finally decided what the trouble was, and they'd have me take a whole bolt down to a cleaner, steam, and have the whole thing steamed all the way through, so much a yard, then I'd work on it. But I did that until after the war started.
You worked at both places at the same time?
Yeah, did both. But I worked at home, but did both of those. And I was at it all the time. What I didn't like about it, even of an evening, I felt I was shirking if I wasn't in there working. I worked day and night on them, and didn't get paid an awful lot either.
How did your husband feel about you?
Oh, it was all right. It was all right. Because I was home then with the girls, like I was supposed to be.
Were they able to help you with the housework and that?
When you could catch them. Teenagers, you know, they're going here and there, and yeah, they did help a lot, really. But I guess I didn't depend on them too much. But they had their things they wanted to do too.
Hello.
After you moved to Santa Ana, did you get involved in any other kinds of activities? Were you able to do anything?
No.
Because you were working for
them? No. I was busy with my home and my girls and what little I was making on the side. No, I didn't. Went to church once in a while, but not even regular as that.
What about social kinds of things that you did or you and your husband?
Well, we'd go to show once in a while. That was about it. We were both too busy working. And the main thing in our lives then was the girls, being things that they had what they needed. And of course, they had a lot of activities. And we had to take them to and go after them, especially, you know, before they're old enough to date and things like that. My husband used to take him to be Malay dances, go back after him at 11 o'clock until he got a little older, and then he didn't have to.
How long did you work with the Drakes? Did you work up until?
Up until I went to work at Douglas.
How did you first learn about the job at Douglas, or that there were jobs?
Well, we've been, I had a very close friend who was the alteration lady at Penny's, and she was a little dissatisfied with what she was making, which wasn't very much. Mine was piecework, and I think it was Labor Day. The war started in 1941. This was the following Labor Day. We decided we'd seen an ad in the paper asking for workers, big ad. So we decided on Labor Day we'd go over there. My husband took us over there. We were there by 9 o'clock in the morning.
Over where?
Over Long Beach. Over where the plant is now, where Douglas, where that plant is. And we'd wait, and we'd fill out into the forms and wait and be interviewed. Then if they wanted you, I called you back for more interviews. That is the same day. And if they decided to take you, then you had your physical, which was just about blood pressure, and checked your heart, and that was just about it. Not very much of a physical. And a chest x-ray. And it was, I think, about 9:30 at night before we got out. And my husband had gone home. And we went, caught a ride to Santa Ana with, I don't know, somebody else that was there that was going, that had to stay. And we were to report back the following Monday at this place in Long Beach. And I'm trying to think of the, it was a great big old garage. And it had the big building had a ramp up on the inside to the second floor. And it was about, you know that Riverside Hotel is where the road kind of, where the, Pacific Highway kind of bends a little bit. So it was right straight north of that, about two, maybe three blocks. And the street runs into that. I don't know the street, but that was it. And they ran three shifts, the women. And the day shift, the spring shift, the night shift, we were on the day shift. And I guess my husband would take us over there every morning. And now wait a minute, she didn't go to school, that's right. She got right in upholstery. And I had put in for upholstery because I'd worked in drapery. But they were sent to that school, she got right in, didn't have to go to school, I did. And most of those of them, women's like that, they didn't hardly know one end of a screwdriver from the other. Dumb as could be about anything like that. And we had to learn on a little bit of 6-inch plate clamped in the vise, you know, how to drill and rivet. And they just got it started on blueprint at the end of the second week. And they emptied that whole school out into the plant. They needed workers. 1,200 women went in the following morning into that plant, green as could be. And what men were there really were, didn't like it. We didn't get a very good reception. They wouldn't tell us anything. You wouldn't help us. You'd ask how to do this. Well, you go to school, you don't know. It was really laughable in a way, but we stuck it out. Got placed, the job I got placed in, I was there for duration, as long as I was there at that time. But it was really funny when you look back on it. So I worked on the wing of the B-17.
I'd like to go back, go into more detail about the things that you were just telling me, but before we do that, I want to ask you why you decided to take the job at Douglas rather than remain in Draper.
Because it paid more money. We went to work at the whole sum of 60 cents an hour, which, and Saturdays we worked, we got time and a half for that. My check was around $30, $35. They didn't even take out anything then. You imagine people going to work for that now?
So you made a lot more there than you.
Oh, yes. I was working piecework, and I wasn't making that much. In a while, maybe I would, but it was maybe $20, $25, maybe $15. I wasn't making very much. Not near for the time I put in.
But how did people react, your husband and your daughters? How did they feel about you working in a factory?
Oh, they thought it was all right. It was that thing to do at that time. I think my husband's kind of proud of me. In fact, he was trying to get on because he was a salesman and people weren't buying vacuum cleaners about that time, you know. And he took the physical at Douglas, was going to work there. In the meantime, he'd already applied to shipyards. And he had gone through his physical, was hired at Douglas for 90 cents an hour. And he got word from the shipyard and the union to come to work. I think it was $1.15 an hour. So he just called into Douglas and told me he had a better job at the shipyards and didn't come. So he was working at the shipyard 10 hours a day, 7 days a week. So we figured we'd better, he said that when he went into shipyards, he felt that he was going to win that war all by himself in there. He's a fast worker. And people in the union told him to slow down. They didn't like him working so fast. So he learned to slow down. You'd think in a wartime they wouldn't be that way, but that's the way it was.
Before you went to work, when you were just thinking about it, what were your expectations of what that work would be like? Did you have any idea at all what it would be like?
Well, I knew I'd be working with tools, and I'd never been in a factory or anything like that before. I didn't know. But everybody else was doing it. I was making good money, and I was going to do it too. Only thing worried me, I was 44 years old. I was afraid they wouldn't take me on account of my age. But that never came up.
You said you went over to the plant and applied directly at the employment office
mm-hmm,
at the plant.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like you to tell me about the interview process that you went through. You said it lasted until 9 o'clock that night. How many people interviewed you, and were you interviewed individually or in a group? Or
interviewed individually. But we were called into a room. They had us outside. I was sitting on benches waiting. And they would call your name in, and there was about 3 or 4 long tables and about 2 interviews at each table. It'd take that many at a time, about 8. And they'd like you to ask your questions, and they'd take what you'd filled out from there. And then if they thought you'd make a good prospect, they'd pass you on. If they didn't, they'd say no.
So you were passed on?
Yes.
And what was the next interview?
Then after you're passed on, they would hire you. That you're a good prospect. Then you had to wait for your physical, and that was, you'd have to wait for your chest x-ray, and from there, sit and wait another hour, or hour and a half for something else. Mm-hmm. It was mostly sitting and waiting.
What kind of things did they ask you in the interview? Do you remember? What would make you a good prospect?
Well, a lot of it would be what experience had you had before, which I hadn't had anything like that. But I had worked, but you never got anything like that. And I suppose it was your attitude, as much as anything. I don't know. I don't just remember what questions they did ask me. And that's a long time ago.
I know. Did you have to take any tests, any aptitude tests or mechanical kinds of tests or
mm-mm.
anything like that?
No. After they decided that you'd make good material to work, then if you passed your physical in, then you were sent down to that school, unless they took you right into the plant like they did my friend. They took her right into the upholstery department because she was knew a lot about upholstering, and she was the alteration lady at Petty's and used to operating their big machines, sewing machines, you know, things like that that they had. But the rest of they were sent down to that school to learn how to be a mechanic, I suppose, how to use tools and what they were.
Now, during the interview process that day, did they talk to you about what your job would be like and how much money you'd be making and what kind of benefits there were, anything like
no.
that?
No. I don't remember them saying anything like that.
They just asked you to go to school,
yeah.
not what kind of, not where you would be working. Anymore.
No, you didn't know until they placed you after you went in there. And then a lot of times where they placed you, if they thought you could do better someplace else, they'd move you around until they got you where they thought that you were best suited.
What kinds of things did you have to do to prepare for going? You said you were expected to go the next day to school or the next Monday?
The next Monday. Well, we had to get overalls, coveralls, wear those. I'd never worn pants or slacks. I was a lot heavier than I am now. And I didn't think I was in shape for it, truthfully. And I felt very self-conscious in them. But we had to wear those and also keep our heads tied up with bandanas. I know we wouldn't win any beauty contests the way we loved it.
Did you ever get used to wearing your overalls? Did they feel kind of more comfortable?
Oh, yes, eventually when I got to wear the baggy kind. I found a picture that was taken these were my two daughters that stayed home. Their husbands were overseas, and those little ones were born at St. Joseph Hospital and then came right there, and their mother stayed home, took care of them, and did the housework while we worked.
And this is the work outfit that you wore?
Yes. That's what I wanted to show you, how
that's wonderful.
How it was. Doesn't that look awful?
I'd like to take this and make a print of it, if that's
okay.
So
not very flattering, I'll tell you. I weighed about 140, 145 then, about 20 pounds more than I do now.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I'm good.
Yeah, it was taken about 19, that would be 44 about right now, because Carla was about, what? She's married and got two daughters now. One of them's 13 and one's 10. He's 35, not married. He's the cutest little guy. But they just seem like our children, where they lost there all the time, you know.
Yeah.
But we had a house there on South Park, and it's about 1,450 square feet. We had three big bedrooms and a hall and a large, great big living room on this hip roof kind like they used to have, you know, and a big dining room and a breakfast room and a big kitchen and the back porch. You know, we had room for them. And I wouldn't hear any other way than what they'd come home with those children.
Did you own the house or were you renting
it? Yeah, we were buying. We rented it for 6 years and finally he wanted to sell and we bought it during the war. But,
Is that the house you moved to when you moved to Santa Ana?
No. We moved out on East Pine Street. We had a furnished book. We moved in there in the 38, I think. I think I got pictures of that house. It's in my wish book. This is the way it looks when they bought it. Years and years back. And this is the way it looked after we got it painted and fixed up. And that's where we lived. That was a 36 and what was that?
The one that's
up my automobile, I think. But that's where we lived and that's where they were. It's 1217 South Park, and still there. The people that bought it from us still live there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, did you have to take tools to school with you?
No, but we had to buy, before we went to work in the plant, we had to buy a toolbox and the necessary tools. Oh, I think it must have been a hammer and dyke diagonals and some wrenches. Depend on what we were doing. Mm-hmm. I don't remember, but we had to have a few tools. And then they had tool cribs where you could go and check out what you needed, like motor drills, you know, and anything you need to work with. But you had to have a few of your own.
How did you feel when you went to school that first day?
I could pick out a wife. I remember one main thing the first day. I went to go to the restroom and I got into the men's restroom. I got out of there in a hurry. Wasn't anybody in there, but my face, I expect, was red, and I got out of there right now.
Now, this is at school or at the plant?
This was at the plant, because it's in building 12. We didn't know where things were, you know. In the restroom, I wandered in there. I got out in a hurry, I'll tell you. That's one of the things I remember about the first day. And I was scared to death. And men would look at you, and they wouldn't help you a bit. Mm. But after a while, when they found out, after we learned how to do things, well, I think that little respect for us, because it ended up with more women than the women. The only men were, they were old men. Older us at that time. But older men that were too old to go in the service. Or young ones waiting to be drafted. One of the two.
Let's go back and talk about the school. You said there were three shifts. And
what, 400?
400 in each shift.
Uh-huh.
And how long was it? Every day for 4 hours or?
Every day for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. We were supposed to go 6 weeks. And it was around the clock, 8 hours. And we were paid while we were learning, 60 cents an hour.
You were paid?
Yes. Our pay began then. But like I told you, at the end of 2 weeks, they emptied out the whole school and sent them out to plant. And we didn't have the training we were supposed to have. We had to learn straight on the job, you know.
When was this now, exactly? 1942?
In 1942, it would be, we got the job at the Labor Day, and it would be 2 weeks, 3 weeks after that.
What kinds of things did you said you practiced drilling and riveting?
Oh, well, they give you a little aluminum plate about 6 inches square, and you put them on a vise, you know, tight. And you'd mark them off, and you had to learn to drill holes through there. Right. And then you're supposed to rivet. Well, I never did get to be an expert riveter at that time. And then different things. And they had to pass inspection. A teacher would come along, you know, and if you didn't have it right, they'd put a red mark around it, and you had to do it over again on another piece of metal. And they were just more or less teaching us how to use those simple tools that we had to use in the plant all the time.
Was there much book learning kind of thing, or was it all practical?
We had to keep notes, yeah, and we had to pass examinations. On Friday, they'd take us in the room, and we'd have a lecture on something, and then we would be given a piece of paper to, they'd ask us questions and answers, and they were graded on that. And I kept a notebook on everything that I did. And learning the size of the drills and the size of the rivets and what drill to use for what size rivets. You know, all those things that you have to learn mm-hmm. when you do that kind of work.
Was this school sponsored by Douglas or
yes.
was it?
Well, I suppose the government too. Government must have been behind it. But Douglas.
All the trainees?
Yeah, went to Douglas. Mm-hmm. That time it was just Douglas. It wasn't McDonald Douglas.
And they were all women?
All women. Mm-hmm. Big, little, and indifferent. All kinds.
Do you remember in the training school women, black women or Mexican women?
Yeah. Yeah, they were. Not an awful lot of them, no, but there were. Mm-hmm. I worked with black women. I worked with Mexican women. I worked with some very nice black women, nicer than some of the white women. No, they didn't discriminate at all.
Let's go back to your first day at the on the job, and you said that you were real frightened to go in.
Well, you were, because you didn't know what you were going to be doing. You said you'd do something wrong, and they wouldn't. They can you? No, you didn't know because you didn't understand. A lot after you've been there and learned it, there's a lot of things they tell you to do. It's just so much Greek to you. You didn't understand what it was. And you were afraid to go ahead. I'd usually say, well, you show me how to do it and I'll do it. I'd get an idea of what it was. I'd see it done, I could do it.
Where did you report the first day?
Well, we reported to the main office, and then they put us out all over the plant wherever they thought they wanted people. Because we worked with the people that we trained with a lot. You know, some would go to one building, some another, some to one department.
Where were you assigned?
I was assigned in Building 12, what was called the skinning crew. Working on the wing of the B-17. It was built, a lot of it was built on the floor of benches, you know, and then it was the framework. It was a line. They had what they called the jigs that they moved it. It was moved from one position to the other as one person did the work, you know, as they did the work in one position, getting ready for the next position. And where we were was at the very end of the line. A skinning crew, they would let down big sheets of aluminum metal. Where we were, it was three stories. The jig was three stories high. Not like a building, but a group of steps up each one up to the third floor. And they would let that down by ropes, and we had to place it and clamp it on, and then it had to be drilled through, blocked and drilled, getting ready for the riveters. We just did the holes and got that on and clamped on. And then it was pushed over and down into the next position, going back, and the riveting crew got a hold of it and riveted it. But that's what we did, what I did all 3 years until VE day.
When you were assigned, were you the only new person in the department?
No. There was a whole lot of us. In fact, when we first went on that crew, there was 12 people on each side. And by the end of the 3 years, when VE day came, there were 5 people on each side. We were doing the same work, half as again fast, with 5 people, and it took 12 when we were new. The line moved twice as fast as when we first went in there. We'd have to have our work done by the time the line was supposed to move and on to the next position.